This is The Topic is Trek, episode 30, for Friday, October 19th, 2018. If Spock has a beard, is he still evil? Welcome to The Topic is Trek, the podcast that runs on impulse power. Join us for a journey where no show has gone before. If it has to do with Star Trek, there's a good chance we'll talk about it. Sooner or later, because on this show, the topic is Trek. Engage already! Well, hello, everyone. I'm Clinton Allvord, one of your The Topic is Trek co-hosts. And beaming in to join me, as always, is Mr. Craig Stepp.
Hey, man. Actually, this transporter felt pretty clean. Did you get the maintenance done on it?
You're missing an arm.
Okay.
Oh, it'll show up sometime. Don't worry about it. It's in the pattern buffer someplace. We'll find it.
When we sweep it out.
That's right. We find loose change, all sorts of things in there.
Loose
change. And not joining us this time around is Mr. Chuck Tomasi.
No.
He's traveling in Europe, I hear.
Yes, he's like all over the place. Actually, he started in Australia, and then he went to London, Germany. Not necessarily in that order, but yeah, he's been all over the place.
But he will be back with us for our next episode. But in the meantime, Craig and I are going to hold down the fort, which is tough to do when you're in space because you can't nail the pegs into the ground. And so it's much harder to hold the fort.
Yeah. Where is down in space?
I don't know. Say, what's up? I don't know.
That's right.
But now it's time to head out for some subspace chatter.
Beep, bleep, bleep. We're doing our own sound effects.
Special effects are fantastic.
Yes.
Oh, and first up, we have a story from the local area, sort of, from Atlanta, Georgia. Well, not from Georgia.
Yeah, from Kingsland, Georgia, as a matter of fact. So Stage 9 Studios, just up the road in Kingsland, Georgia, as we just mentioned. Star Trek fans are boldly going where few have gone before. The studio has been the home for fan-filled productions such as Star Trek Continues and Starship Farragut and others. It features a large-scale reproductions of Constitution-class Starship set from their 1960s original series, all of which will be open to the public this weekend. What?
This week? Yes!
Yeah, so if you listen to this on Friday, hurry up. So, production volunteer Dan Scanlon, who was also a reporter for the Florida Times Union, helped build many of the sets. Quote, the latest addition, the Warp Core, which was a beautiful red-lit design, had a red-lit design to it, and engine room. There was a captain's chair to sit in and get selfies done. Okay. And I tell you, it's cool to watch other people's reactions, Scanlon said during Tuesday's First Coast Connection. Studios is holding an open house where visitors can walk around the Star Trek sets, getting fitted with pointed Vulcan ears, and watch the cast and crew of the Dreadnought Dominion film and short vignette before a live audience.
That's cool.
Yeah. The free Star Trek Fan Appreciation Weekend will be held inside the studios at 516 West William Avenue in Kingsland, Georgia. It starts Friday afternoon and runs through Sunday. Display hours and additional information are found on the Stage 9 Facebook page. And I think if you just search for Stage 9 Studios on Facebook, you'll be able to find it. Or you can find the link through our show notes.
That's right. For episode 30 over at thetopicistrek.com.
Bing.
Oh, there we go. That's our ding this time around.
Hey,
I'm
sitting here thinking. I'm thinking. Yes. I'm family-less this weekend, and Georgia is, I mean, that would be a long ride. I don't know.
Well, if it's it, well, and I'm sure it is very much like the one that's in Ticonderoga. It's well worth the visit to see it.
Yeah, actually, you know what? Our friend Gary Lindros lives in Jacksonville, which is actually very close to Gary. Maybe we should alert him.
Indeed, we will let him know. Of course, if he's listening to the show, he knows. But if he's listening to the show the week after, he'll know, but he'll be very upset. So maybe we will let him know.
Why didn't you guys tell me? That's what he'll say.
Of course, our Star Trek fan friends go, yeah, I knew about that 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
All right. So we're going to go from Georgia to some late breaking news from Hollywood or Toronto or New York, because this is information that comes to us from TrekMovie.com. Exclusive planned Star Trek TV shows will differ in style with breaks in between to avoid burnout. This is the, I believe it's the last of Trek Movie's articles where they're interviewing various cast and crew at New York Comic Con. And this was a segment where they were interviewing Alex Kurtzman and Heather Caden. They were talking about, of course, season two of Discovery. They were talking about the Patrick Stewart Picard series coming up. They touched on the fact that they're not ready to talk about the animated series yet. And there was also a hint of another series. And they hinted there that we might be hearing something very soon about that one, which would blindside us as much as the Picard series, I think, if we suddenly heard something. But you're talking about all these different iterations of Trek. Mm-hmm. They're all going to be on CBS All Access. Well, asked about that, Trek Movie asked a producing pair if they see a future where Star Trek is on All Access year-round, with shows running one after another in succession. "It'll never be that clean," replied Caden, "because also I think we want people to be excited for it to come, not burn out." And Craig and I were talking about this before the show started, that when you have series that just keep going and going and going, we had differing opinions about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, but certainly we experienced this with Trek in the 90s, where you would have overlaps of shows. You would have Deep Space Nine on at the same, well, not the same time. That would be very confusing, but you know, on the concurrent with Voyager and so forth and so on. The article goes on to say, in the 1990s, the Star Trek franchise was producing over 50 episodes across two simultaneous series in most years, leading to criticism of franchise burnout. We've also recently seen the CEO of Disney say that the company tried to do too much too fast with Star Wars movies, leading to the studio putting some of their plans on hold, so oversaturation is again top of mind in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. At New York Comic Con, Alex Kurtzman used a food analogy when outlining how they see the scheduling of the rollout of future Star Trek shows, telling Trek Movie, quote, "You have a good meal and then decide to take a walk before you have dessert. That's how to look at it." Which I think is a, I think we both agree that's a good approach to take with this.
Yes.
You just don't want to, once series ends, you don't have a chance to continue that analogy, digest it, and you're on to something else.
Yeah. Well, I think the other part of this is they mentioned about having different styles, which we, I think I even brought up the point, hey, what kind of style is the Picard show going to be? Is it going to be like, you know, I was actually thinking more along the sets and stuff like that, because of the way that looks a lot different from what Discovery looks like. Mm-hmm. If they would try to replicate that kind of feeling, I'm not saying that it needs to look exactly like the Enterprise did back then, or even some of the houses and stuff that they were inside of buildings in the next gen, but try to replicate that same kind of feeling, which,
right,
you know, I think it's cool if they try to give everything a different feel, or, you know, its own character, I should say.
Right. I mean, and the Picard series has an advantage on which way it wants to go, because it's 20 years after, you know, the end of our experiences with the Next Generation. And as we know, a lot can happen in 20 years. Mm-hmm. If you had a change of uniforms, that would not necessarily be out of line. You know, I don't think Picard is necessarily, well, we don't know. I don't know if he's still in Starfleet or not, but
I thought they said that he wasn't, but maybe he's leaving it or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Possible. But he could still run into people that are from Starfleet, and I could see the uniforms not looking like they looked on the Next Generation, or Voyager, mm-hmm. even, because it's later than that.
Yeah. So I'm hoping that things will look a little different to give us a little different look, you know, like when, remember, yesterday's Enterprise, you know, the mm-hmm. uniforms, they look similar to, the TOS movie style with the red.
Yeah, essentially they just didn't have,
but they have the white collars.
Yeah. The Dickies or whatever, you know, that,
right.
Them.
Yeah. But yeah, so I hope that I can't imagine that we're not going to see some people in different uniforms, but the sets, I don't know. Anyway, I was hoping that I liked the idea, back to my point, I liked the idea of the different styles. We talked about this a minute ago, Disney's wrestling with, and we just mentioned about the CEO talking about doing too much Star Wars too fast. And although Marvel's kind of worked it up, but I wouldn't say they did it too fast. Marvel didn't. I think they kind of, you know, when you start a fire, you start it small and you kind of build and you build and you build, you know, same thing with this. They started with Iron Man and they started with a few more things and it took a while. And now they're ramped up and they got a huge fan base. That's the way to do it. Not just shove everything in your face. And hey, by the way, we got 16 different series in your face now that you can watch.
Right. So, well, I also think that, because although the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies often have kind of the same undercurrent tone to them, mm-hmm. there are exceptions to that, of course, but I feel like they have a bigger pool of characters to deal with. And this could theoretically be true for DC if they ever get their act together, then right. then really Star Wars or Star Trek have, because they should reside in the same plane, the same universe, tied somehow to the same story with not 500 characters, but, you know, a little bit more intimate than that. Mm-hmm. So I feel like that's a bunch of different stories kind of weaving in together, whereas these other franchises, well, they started from a single thing, which was a single thing, and then tried to push on the edges of that. Mm-hmm. And that's, I think that's a harder thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I would probably argue that Star Trek did the same thing that Marvel did. It's just a lot more years.
Right.
You had TOS and then, oh, by the way, now 20 something years later, we got TNG. Oh, now we got DS9. And then they kind of stack things a little bit too much, like we talked about. So kind of spread it out a little bit.
Yeah. All right. So we're looking forward to seeing lots of Trek, not all at once, but hopefully including this other series that they're not talking about yet, but we'll hear something soon.
Maybe not all at once, but often.
That's right. And speaking about one of those things, we got a little bit more information about one of those projects.
Yes. Again, about the Picard series.
Who have we got any other messenger from sort of that wants to be in that, wants to be a part of that one? I don't know. Marina?
I sent a text in.
Checked in? Denise Crosby? Or
I sent a text in.
You did? You wanted to be in it?
Yeah, sure.
I see. All right.
Yeah, wouldn't you want to be a walk-on for...
Absolutely.
Oh, what's up, Picard? Walk off. You know, they just stayed left. So I think after our show last week, we did see that I started to say Wesley Crusher. My mind's
blank.
Yeah, Will Wheaton, thank you. Said he wanted to be in it. That was funny because I was actually looking for every you know, little tiny bit player that was ever in TNG. And
are you insisting that Will Wheaton was a tiny bit player in TNG?
No. During our show, I was looking for every bit player you know, to mention. And so it was funny after the episode, he goes, Will Wheaton said, hey, I'm in for it. Maybe he was listening to our show.
He was.
But anyway, so the producers confirmed Picard series planned for multiple seasons, which I'm very happy for that. Mm-hmm. Jean-Luc Picard is back, and he is planning on sticking around for a while. Star Trek producers Alex Kurtzman and Heather Caden, have confirmed to Trek Movie that the new Picard series, developed for CBS All Access, is planned as an ongoing series. This debunks rumors and assumptions that the show would be a limited series, with Caden specifically saying they are planning for the show to run for multiple seasons. The producers also confirmed that the show is expected to begin filming, which I think it's in April.
April.
And the writer's room for Picard series has been at work for about a month now. Patrick Stewart, let's separate him a little bit.
Yeah.
Shared a photo from the room on the first day stating that the journey has begun. That's a little more Sean Connery, I think.
Yeah, I was going to say, close enough.
How short it has begun. All right, so the Picard was announced by Stewart himself with a surprise appearance at Star Trek Las Vegas. The series is expected to take place about two decades after the events of Star Trek Nemesis.
And then it goes on to his quote about, I think, when he was making his announcement.
Yeah.
So I think that that's interesting that that's a, I don't know if it's an aggressive timeline or not, because if they've been working on it for about a month and they're going to start filming in April, that seems somewhat aggressive.
Well, I would say it depends on how many episodes they're going to do and how many scripts they need to have done for production to actually begin. Cause then they can finish out the scripts before production's finished and, you know, kind of overlap a little bit. I don't know. I'm not a professional screenwriter. I don't know how this works.
Yeah. It's also interesting that when you think about it, I mean, Discovery is extremely effects intensive, which is one of the reasons why we have such a long lag between seasons. And I wonder if the Picard series will be less so. And because, again, that could be a difference in style, that it's more a character-driven piece and not necessarily an effects-laden piece. So.
Yeah, and for this show, part of me is kind of hoping that it's not an effects-laden. At least that's the feeling I get. I don't know. Just I want to see what he's doing, and I guess it depends on where he's at.
Right.
But I don't know. I don't think it needs to be effects-laden. So maybe it's not as aggressive as we think. Is there 10 episodes or... What do we get for Discovery this year? 13?
The initial order for season one was 13 episodes. And then before they finished, they got the green light for two more. So the first season was 15, but this season is 13. So I'm guessing they will be 13 episode seasons for the Picard series as well. Okay. That's pretty standard. You would have that for television. If you're going to have half season shows, usually it's a 13 episode season.
Unless you're from the UK.
That's true.
Yeah, and then you get six, eight, maybe.
Or one, or seven, or three.
Here's series three. It has 10 episodes, or eight episodes. All right, remember Gunsmoke? They had 20-something, or no, 30. How many episodes were in a season in Gunsmoke? It was ridiculous. Well,
I was watching an old TV Western Have Gun Will Travel, and I think I saw season one episode 33. You know, these days I think at the most a series is 22 episodes for a year, and this was I can't imagine they had much of a break at all between filming seasons on this, those shows back then, because it was just a constant grind to get the shows out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I was trying to look, real quick. Season one, how many episodes there you go. Yeah. There's 39, 39 yeah. episodes in Gunsmoke, the first season.
Yeah.
What's right?
And that was an hour long show, I believe.
Yeah. So what did they do? Just live out in the set, the movie set?
That's right. Yeah, that Western town is a lived in look. Yeah, because we live in it.
That's right.
All right. Yeah. So we're going to leave Captain Jean-Luc Picard, or Mr. Jean-Luc Picard, for perhaps. Now. I don't know. And head to the world of gaming for my dear Star Trek Online.
Yeah.
The game that was my nemesis, no pun intended, over the summer.
That's right. Take a roll.
That's right. Just roll. Star Trek Online enters the age of discovery. The TV series Star Trek Discovery may be gearing up for a second season, but for Trekkies who cannot wait that long, Star Trek Online has released a new update that allows fans to partake in this particular period of the Federation's history. And this is from the press release. Age of Discovery opens in the year 2256, just after the Battle of the Binary Stars. In the wake of a brutal war against the Klingons, Starfleet captains must face Ja'ula, matriarch of the House of Mokai, and sister to T'Kuvma, who seeks to alter the destiny of the Alpha Quadrant.
Hmm.
Players will need to rely on the help of fellow Starfleet Academy cadet Sylvia Tilly, played by Discovery actress Mary Wiseman, who has come home to assist with training and see them off on their first assignment. From there, they will journey to iconic locations from Star Trek Discovery, like the dilithium mines of Korvan II, explore the new experimental Crossfield-class starship, the USS Glenn, and defend Starbase 1 from a fearsome attack by the Klingon House of D'Gor. Well, if I recall correctly, the Glenn doesn't survive. I mean, it gets attacked, and then they have that actually, implosion and of the spore drive. And
yeah, I was actually thinking you get to explore the Glen. Hey, look, it looks just like the Discovery.
Yeah. Funny thing about that. So no. An article that I didn't put into the show notes was a thing saying, you know, it is Tilly's universe and we all just live in it.
That's right.
Because I mean, you know, Tilly is everywhere. You know, she's the first one with a Trek short. She's the first, you know, she's in this game here as your main character. She gets to be the first one to swear. She's just like, she's everywhere doing everything.
You know, actually I remember when they announced Discovery and they said, well, it's going to be a story that doesn't revolve around the captain. And actually, I think you could probably make an argument for Tilly would have been just as interesting to follow as Michael Burnham.
Right. Because there's that constant, undertone of she will be a captain someday.
Yeah. So I think, you could have made a good series just from her alone.
I mean, you know, fine. Following Burnham, but maybe she can eventually get her own series.
Yeah.
I mean, Tilly, you know, but you're right. So we'll see. She can pal around with Picard, but with through a time loop or something. I have no idea what's going on.
Well, I think I think people really fell in love with her because she played the character very well. And for the type of character she is, you know, trying to.
Right. I think that she plays the part on a continuing basis that when we had the live show where I said, you know, shuttle pod or airlock for, you know, Barclay.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of the things that they said about Barclay, you could say about Tilly.
Yep.
You know, that she's the person that is relatable, that, you know, kind of gets excited about stuff and, you know, just and much more, oh, that's me type of thing.
Or I thought you were going to say, she never got anything right.
If she got nothing right, they'd all be dead by now. So.
Yeah, right. So, yeah.
All right. So we're going to go now from video games to another media.
Yes. Comic books. Because everything revolves around comic books, right?
That's revolving around.
I thought it was Scooby-Doo for a minute. So for the first time ever, the beloved crews of all four Star Trek incarnations, the original series, Next Gen, Deep Space Nine, and Voyager will be pitted against one another in IDW's mind-blowing comic book miniseries. So Star Trek, The Q Conflict. Oh, I'm sorry. There was a comma in there. Star Trek, The Q Conflict. Debuting in January, the epic six-part event series features the writing of Scott and David Tipton, the Star Trek, The Next Generation, Broken Mirror. We talked about that comic book series recently. And art by David Messina, Cloak and Dagger, and Star Trek Countdown. When a dispute between godlike beings threatens the galaxy, it will take all of Starfleet's best captains, all at once, to stop them. James T. Kirk, Jean-Luc Picard, Catherine Janeway, and Benjamin Sisko must go head-to-head in a competition rigged by the arrogant Q and his omnipotent. Yeah, I say that word all the time. Cohorts. Hmm.
Well, you say it about me, and I understand.
Clinton, you're omnipotent. this is it. The biggest Star Trek series ever, spanning starships, centuries, and galaxies, says Scott Tipton. All of Starfleet's most legendary officers join together for the first time against some of the greatest threats they'll ever face. It's nothing like you've seen before. Mm. David Tipton adds, but it wouldn't be Star Trek if it wasn't also about character. When with so many Starfleet legends crossing paths for the first time ever, the Q Conflict will give readers the opportunity to see their favorite characters in a brand new light.
Except Kirk's will just be across his eyes.
Yeah, that's the light he's talking about. It's across his chest, actually.
His ripped shirt chest.
Yeah. So I actually took a look at Broken Mirror, and I enjoyed it. So I think this is something I'm going to look forward to. Because this is not the first time that they've crossed over with other, not just with each other, but other things. Like, I think, or did you have that in the show notes? I don't want to talk about it.
Yep. I believe we'll be, I know we're I think I didn't put that article in particular in there, but we will be talking about that a bit later on about the crossovers.
Okay. Well, I was thinking of, just to quickly mention it, Doctor Who, but we'll talk about the rest of them in a minute.
Mm-hmm. So that's very interesting. I can understand with the lead times and so forth and so much to get done why they wouldn't even attempt to put in the crew of the Discovery as well. And it's like, are you going to put Lorca in there? Lorca would be kind of like, I don't really care what you people do.
Yeah, right. You know, I'm just trying to get back to my own mirror universe.
That's right. Oh, did I let that slip? Sorry.
Spoiler alert. So, have you read many Star Trek comic books?
I've read a few. I did read, I think they mentioned in here, Star Trek Countdown, and that was, I believe, the comic book that came out that leads into Star Trek 2009.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. There was, they led off with a little bit of a prequel kind of story.
Right.
For Star Trek 9. That's right. Or 2009.
Yeah. I think that was the backstory about Spock actually trying to use the red matter
I remember, showing my age a little bit, and same with you, I'm sure. But as a kid,
they're all in black and white, drawn by hand.
I know, it's crazy. No, not quite like that. But okay. So, you know, there was no way to watch the movie again, but yet there was a desire to kind of relive it. Whether I wanted to see it again, in Star Wars, I kind of tagged along to whoever was going to go see it, to see it a million times. But some things like Indiana Jones, stuff like that, I got a lot of those comics. Some of them were the movie adaption. You could reread it, or you could read continuing adventures from those characters. And I got a lot of Star Trek, TOS ones, and some later stuff that it's fun to just go back and read, or was fun as a kid to go back and read and kind of see new stories of where they're going beyond what you just saw in the movie. So I love stuff like this, seeing, you know, the characters continue, especially in Voyager and DS9. I don't think they've, correct me if I'm wrong, I don't know if they've had comic book adaptions before of DS9.
I'm not the comic book aficionado, so I know there's somebody out there screaming.
Oh, excuse me. Yes, they have.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'm sure there's somebody saying, oh, of course, they ran for like 12 years doing, but anyway.
Yeah, why didn't you read that before? Anyway.
Sorry, never mind. We will move on from there to a story that's kind of a follow-up to one we did before, has a little bit more interesting information. This is this comes to us from sciencefiction.com, which I don't even know if any was a thing before. It says, Christopher McQuarrie shares how he'd approach a Star Trek film. Christopher McQuarrie has become a franchise darling due to his work on Mission Impossible Fallout, and was recently asked if he would be interested in ever working on Star Trek. The answer was a clear yes, and the writer and director shared not only what he preferred, that he'd prefer to do a feature film, but how he would approach it. McQuarrie has also shared why making a Star Trek in today's cinematic environment would have its own challenges, which wouldn't have existed in previous years. Initially, McQuarrie was asked in what format the world, he would approach Star Trek if given a chance to create a story in the universe. Quote, yeah, probably a feature. I like Star Trek. Is kind of it's gone away from what the tenet of the series were about, which was kind of the hope and the promise of science. Today's Star Trek movies, this is out of the quotes, today's Star Trek movies might be blockbuster darlings and look amazing, but they have lacked some of the spirit which the original mostly had, outside of a few notable exceptions. And they don't say that, but so again, quoting, he says, it's simple math. You know what you have to do with Star Trek? You have to make Star Trek for a domestic audience. Star Trek does better domestically than it does internationally. So I would come to Star Trek and go, realistically, how much money should I make this Star Trek movie for? And you'd give me a budget, and I'd go off and make the movie. That's what I would do. You look at any movies like that. If you just be honest with yourself about the economics, it's just a very real part of doing that. So I think that that's a realistic approach to take. I can't, you know, we slam, and I think rightly so, on Star Trek Beyond marketing, that they did a horrible job of marketing that movie. And I think that Star Trek does well in some overseas markets pretty well. I think Germany, I believe, is at least one of those markets. But I can understand where he's coming from. And it's sort of like focusing on where do you feel this story works the best? And if it works best domestically, well, have it with those sensibilities. And hopefully it works other places if you do that.
Well, I would argue that I believe Star Trek belongs on the small screen more. Although, don't get me wrong, I love watching, you know, the big budget movies, but I think it works better on the small screen and as a serial kind of thing, because you get to, you have a big crew and you can kind of focus on one or two characters over here, one or two characters over here, and keep going down throughout the episodes and get a bigger picture of everybody rather than trying to shove everybody in a movie and give everybody their own screen time or, anyway, that's my point.
No, I agree with you. I think that if you do the movies though, what you have to do is really tightly focus. Either you're tightly focused on action, you're tightly focused on, let's take for example, Star Trek II. You're focused on realistically three people. Spock, Kirk, and Khan.
Right.
Everyone else is pretty well secondary, you know, to that story. So you really narrow it down, and if you narrow it down enough, you can make a good character study of a couple. But you're never going to do what you do on television to round out these characters. You just don't have the time, and you've got to get a complete story in the 2 hours that satisfies all the boxes, you know.
Yeah.
This one has a line, this one has an action sequence, this one, you know, does this over here. But like you, I like going to the movies and seeing it on the big screen as well.
Yeah. But yeah, but as was it Chris Pine? Somebody was talking about this previously, that you kind of have to make these a big budget action, almost action movies, because that gets people in the seats. Mm-hmm. But see, I also like Star Trek for some of the more cerebral stories. You go, and you, where you kind of go, okay, now I get it, kind of, you know, concept, you know, where,
right,
they, where they're looking at social issues or something like that. And you go, oh, when, like watching the, I forget the race, the black and white guys.
Yes.
You know, mm-hmm, that you go, at first when I was a kid, I was like, okay, I see black and white guys. Oh, now later on you go, oh, that's why they're black and white, and then white and black. Oh. Yeah. As I got a little older. Those kind of things, it's like, I'd rather see a lot of those stories too, but you can't do that in a theater.
Right. And, well, you can, but I think you run the risk that, again, in Hollywood, being a business, mm-hmm, they're going to look at it going, okay, I see a script and it's got 4 pages of dialogue. Yeah. Why are there 4 pages of dialogue?
Who's talking so much?
Yeah. It's like, why have we not cut away to, you know, ships in space doing battle?
Right.
And because they think that's what works the best. And you have a movie like Interstellar, which is based in space, mm-hmm, or a movie like The Martian, which, yep, is based in space, doesn't have a lot of that stuff. So particularly The Martian doesn't have that. It's all science-based.
Well, let's be clear. The Martian was based on another planet, Mars.
But I'm saying that it doesn't, sorry, you know, that's really focused in on a character.
Yeah.
If you thought of that as a Star Trek movie, say you did that and say the captain is trapped on an alien planet and they think he's dead and, you know, the crew leaves, you'd get as much screen time for everyone else in the cast as you do of the people that are on board the rescue ship that turns around and comes back.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Spoiler alert for that one. That's a decision that you make. And, you know, I talked about Interstellar. Well, Interstellar has what, like, your main character is like 4 or 5 people tops. Yep. There's really nobody else in the story. There's a robot and a couple of people. So I think the cast has to be small for it to be that kind of movie.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You got to narrow it down. You can't put everybody in there. Hey, right. By the way, as you were talking about The Martian, I just had this funny thought. What if classic Robin Williams was The Martian?
Oh, I know. Let's not. Let's not even think about that.
Mrs. Doubtfire on Mars.
No. Woo!
I'm sorry. Just a funny thought that occurred to me. Anyway.
Well, let's go into something much more serious then. Toys, yes, and such.
Yes. Toys. So at New York Comic Con, Eagle Moss, Hallmark, Fanset, and Diamond Select shows off new and upcoming collectibles. In other words, it shows me really cool things I want but can never afford.
That's right.
That's right. Just as long as I know they exist, I'm happy. So in addition to all the Star Trek Discovery and Picard series news that has been coming out, that we've also covered here, at a New York Comic Con, there was also some cool Trek merchandise that was to check out on the exhibition floor. Sorry, my mouth is getting dry. We have gathered highlights from some of the new upcoming Star Trek collectibles on display from Eagle Moss, Hallmark, Fanset, and Diamond Select Toys. So we go down and we see Star Trek Discovery. Eagle Moss has featured a lot of their new upcoming ship models and more. For New York Comic Con, they had a limited edition Star Trek Discovery model of the I'm sorry. I got tripped up because we were talking about the Glenn looking like Discovery.
And that's because this is the Glenn.
Yeah, so it's the USS Glenn, a variant of the USS Discovery model. Only 500 of the Glenns were made. We only saw one in the show. But then they sold for $80, which is probably not bad, considering. They were also showing off 3 more upcoming ships from their Discovery line, the USS Braun, coming in November. Brand, excuse me. I'm sorry.
That's okay. That's right.
Coming in November, and the Klingon Ku class,
Oh, you got something in your throat there.
Yeah, need more water. For their upcoming winter 2018 and USS Clark. See, that one I can say.
There you go.
Bowing in 2019. And in the Clark actually resembles the Reliant a little bit.
Yes. And right below there is.
And there's yes. So Igamals has an exclusive at the New York Comic Con from their XL line of ships, which is the USS Reliant, which is on sale for $65. I would have totally bought that if that was all the money I had to get home with. I would have bought that.
Yeah, it's really nice. Lots of detailing on this thing. I know that these are different scales. It's a shame they have nothing in the shot to really give you a sense of scale of the different ships.
Yeah, it says their XL line, and I'm not clear on how big that is, but I don't know. It kind of looks like it's got some size to it. Mm. Smaller. I mean, it looks bigger than the ones you place the orders for. You know, you get on the monthly subscription.
Right.
Yeah, and then right below, we see the Enterprise C. We see the Earth space dock from the movies.
Which, and again, looks huge.
It looks huge. Yeah, it's probably not as big. Well, I don't know. There's a coffee cup behind it. So there's your sense of scale.
Oh, and we should point out, we're looking at all these photos. You're going, what? We can't. Well, again, if you go into the show notes for episode 30 for The Topic is Trek, we have links to all the articles we're talking about.
That's right. And you can also see pictures of the various shuttles, some from the Kelvin and so on and so forth. They're really cool. Oh, and of course, a waist-high bust of Kirk. He's missing his legs.
Oh, my goodness. See, you got it. You're missing an arm. He went through the transporter. He's missing legs.
Hey, can you put me back in? Let me finish this. Finish materializing.
What happened? I was looking up the XL line at Igamals, and the first one I came across was the Enterprise NX-01, and that clocks in at 8.5 inches. So if these are the same scale, and I'm not saying that they are, I mean, some of these ships are huge.
Yeah, that would be cool. XL line. Yeah, I'm not sure. Here you go, XL edition homepage. I don't know. You can go check them out for yourself.
Yeah. Yep.
Oh, by
what
the
else
way,
we got?
Oh, by the way, if you scroll down just a little bit further, and we'll wrap this up real quick.
It's Kirk's legs? No.
Yeah, there's his legs. Actually, if you go down a little bit, you'll see Kirk and Spock. They got hands and phasers you can swap out on their action figures. But no, below, Diamond Select has these really cool Enterprise models, but they're probably about as long as your forearm, maybe a little longer. They're good size, and they have one for the Enterprise C.
Right, which is interesting.
Yeah, a lot of those Diamond Select ones have the sound effects and stuff for whatever series they came from. So they've come out with several Enterprises, of course, and they had one from I'm trying to think of the one they had. Anyway, they had from the movies, and they have different sounds from the movies, different quotes and stuff like that when you hit the buttons. But this is pretty cool. I always like the Enterprise C's shape. It has a little bit of the Enterprise D, but it has like the angled saucer dish. It's pretty cool. Anyway.
Yeah. And we also see the Hallmark ornaments for next year. And just like past year, we were talking about these being shown, but they were just like these cardboard cutout things. Like the Discovery was just this flat thing. Well, we see one that's Saru and Burnham. We see one that's, they're going to do the refit of the classic Enterprise. And then there's a transporter that shows Kirk, Spock, and McCoy on the transporter. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to tell how these work because, again, these are just essentially mock-up cardboard things. But I don't know. Did you pick up the Discovery? I picked that up over the summer when it was when it came out.
I missed that. I think it was limited too, wasn't it?
Don't know. Because they released the Christmas stuff in waves, and it's really odd to go into a store in like July or whatever and pick up your Christmas ornaments. But
well, I would totally be down for the Enterprise refit, because I do like that version of the Enterprise.
Yeah, I'm kind of I was surprised they hadn't done that one already.
Yeah, I know, right?
Because they've done the TV series, I think, three times now. I think it was their very first one, which is one we actually have. Mm-hmm. Then there's the one they just did for the 50th, but I think they also did a third one. I could be wrong about that.
Hmm.
So I'm just surprised if they haven't done the refit before. So very interesting.
Hmm.
All right. Speaking of interesting, we're going to move on to an interesting documentary. Of course, we're speaking about the Deep Space Nine documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Now, it says here in this article, I want to talk about this. It talks about the documentary nears completion. And this article is from October 13th. And we'll talk about a second part of this article in a second. What I thought was interesting is that there has already been a premiere mm-hmm. in New York for the documentary. It happened, I believe, last weekend. And then there's going to be – there was a closed private premiere. And then
– it was for like they're not patrons, but the people that chipped in on it, right? Wasn't it?
I think so. And the other one is going to be in – I think it's going to be the convention in Germany, which is coming up on October 20th. No, I'm sorry, in England, in Birmingham. But what I found fascinating was that apparently must have been a very tight-knit group of people that went to this first premiere, because although I didn't dig deep into excuse me,
mm-hmm.
Everything I could possibly find, I could not find anybody talking about the documentary who saw it, except that they liked it. No review, no nothing at all about it. And I can't tell whether everyone was told, you know, don't tell anyone, you know, this is your special premiere and your first look at the thing. And maybe we'll hear more after it makes its second premiere, if you will.
I see. I think it was on, well, here you go. I'm looking over here. So it was on Indiegogo, and they raised money to make the documentary. So,
right.
I imagine you probably got, you know, not backstage access, but, I don't know why I was going to say that, but, access to go see it. I don't know.
So the interesting part about this article is that they talk about, that they've included in this article the first image from the animated season 8 scene. And you say, what? Well, what happens in the documentary is that they have a writer's room feature where showrunners Ira Stephen Bear mm-hmm. gathers with four of the Deep Space Nine writing staff, Ronald D. Moore, Robert Hewitt Wolf, Hans Beimler, and Renee Echevarria, to break a story for what would have been the first episode of a hypothetical eighth season of Deep Space Nine. One of the stretch goals of the funding campaign was to hire an animator so selected scenes of the season 8 storyboard sessions could be brought to life.
Sweet.
This week, the documentary released the very first look at that animation. It features what appears to be Ezra Dax as a captain in a uniform that seems to be like the future Starfleet depicted in Star Trek The Next Generation's final episode, All Good Things.
Mm-hmm.
It's not clear if the scene is a flash forward or if they envision season 8 jumps forward in time entirely. I'm definitely interested in seeing this documentary. I don't know. I know we have these premieres that are happening, and they said that it would be coming out this year, but I don't know if we have an actual release date for it at this point.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, when we were talking about the premiere, so mm-hmm. official, and I was looking at the Indiegogo site and on their project updates, official Indiegogo premiere invites are out to all ticket holders. And they did it in Los Angeles on the 12th of October. Okay. No, New York City on the 14th. And Birmingham in the UK on the 19th and the 20th. So
I would assume after that, we should get a release date. Again, if we don't have one and I just have not been able to find that.
I think you can buy the DVD, though, on their website. You can pre-order it for $35.
I mean, if they had, I mean, I'd be fascinated by being a fly on the wall as they're trying to break an episode, because that's really a fascinating thing for me to watch. And I'd hope that it wasn't just a really truncated, heavily edited writing session.
Yeah.
That we get to see all the, like, throwing this idea around and that idea around and, you know, what, you know, how things get developed. And, you know, eventually you would normally have one of the writers then take all that compilation of ideas and go off and write the episode. So I don't know how this actually plays out in the feature, but I'd be really fascinated to watch it.
So all the writers are doing the voices for the characters and the animator. They can only afford to get an animator.
And it's all guys. So Ezra is going to be really interesting to listen to.
Hey, you know what? I would totally do a voice in the animated. That would be awesome. Like just a side character or something.
Okay. Patrick Stewart said, look, you can do one or the other. And he said, if you're going to do that, you're not doing my show. And he's cutting you loose.
Oh man. He's cut me loose already. All right.
All right. And for our last story, I thought we'd have a little bit of fun with a character study about a Star Trek fan.
Yes. So a lifelong Star Trek fan on the power of collections and conversations. So I was trying to figure out where the article actually started. So Darren Han loves to get into conversations about Star Trek. Quote, I like going out somewhere and people say, did you ever watch a show called Star Trek? Who says that? And I say, yeah, just a little bit, says Han.
We'll say Han.
Yeah, the original Star Trek television series went on air a year after Han was born. Did you just say Han? Which one?
Han. We'll go with whatever you feel like doing. He's not here.
Han. Yeah. If he calls in,
right.
So Han says he's been a lifelong fan. Gene Roddenberry's philosophy is that everybody is equal, everybody is accepted, and everybody is normal, no matter what you're into or what you do. So, anyway, there's a video associated with this. He's talking about his collectibles, and I think it's really cool. It's a good message that, you know, everybody should be included, right?
Yeah. And, you know, I like the fact that he's, you know, just excited about the show and collects all sorts of stuff. I mean, now I thought it was interesting that we have the Star Trek V, the Final Frontier craft marshmallow dispenser. And I didn't, in the movie, didn't they call them marshmallows?
Yeah, it was like they didn't quite.
He's holding the dispenser as well. I don't want to play the video, but there's a still of that as well.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's right. Right there in the front.
I'm trying to see if it's.
Well,
I can't read the writing.
Go there, watch the video because he has a impressive collection. I'll give him that.
Yeah.
And you know what? One of the things right there at the 16-second mark is the Mego set that I used to have. I think we talked about it on this show before. It was the Bridge Enterprise. It was basically cardboard and plastic. It just folded out. And man, that thing was awesome.
I think I still have mine in the basement someplace.
Really?
Yeah. I sold the characters ages ago, but I think I still have the bridge.
Mm-hmm. Oh, there it is. It's called a marshmallow dispenser. That's what it says.
Okay. For some reason I thought it was a different name that it had, but anyway, now that closes up our subspace chatter. However, I will say that there are stories we didn't have time to get to because we're running long And we are including links to all the stories we didn't get a chance to cover as well in the show notes for episode 30 over at thetopicistrek.com. So go there and you can read not only about these articles and see the pictures or watch the videos, but you can check out a bunch of other stuff as well.
Good.
All right. Now to our main topic for our main mission, what I wanted to do was head out this time and talk about all the stuff we've been learning about season two of Discovery. And it's a lot of stuff,
yes.
But before we even say word one, and knowing that these things are all from interviews and trailers and the like, spoiler alert, if you just don't want to know anything about season two, in which case, if you've been listening at all to our show, well, too late anyway.
You're already screwed.
All right. I've got a lot of bullet points here. I'm just going to try to go through some highlights. The first one is that we found out that it is indeed a 13-episode season that will begin on January 17th on CBS All Access. One thing we didn't have a good answer on between interviews with Doug Jones and Mary Wiseman is, do the short treks actually have any connection to season two? Sometimes her answer was a little bit yes, sometimes it was a little bit no. Kind of confusing.
Yeah, I thought about that too as I was watching, especially watching that first one.
We know that this season is going to be more about exploration rather than about the war, and that it picks up right after the end of season one, where Captain Pike, played by Anson Mount, comes on board the Discovery from the Enterprise and assumes command of the ship. Now, this ticks off Saru a bit because, well, it doesn't tick him off, but he's disappointed. He's just, I'm not angry, I'm just disappointed that his temporary command of the Discovery is over so soon.
Hey, by the way, if you read Desperate Hours like I did, that's not the first time he's been slighted.
Oh, my.
Yeah. So.
It also appears that the Enterprise has been damaged, which may be why Pike needs the Discovery. And Captain Pike clearly is going to be in pretty much all of season two.
So the captain doesn't go down with his ship. He just, there's another one in the vicinity. Pull over.
That's
there.
Right.
Pull over.
That's right. I recognize them. Let's go over there.
Their ship looks good. Jump in there.
Of course, we know that Spock is not on the Enterprise. We do get to see the Enterprise uniforms, which are a modification of the TOS uniforms. We get to see number one, played by Rebecca Romijn. We get to see some interiors of the Enterprise. At least we get to see Spock's quarters. Now, do we see the bridge? Do we see the transporter room? When asked about that, we get the answer of, well, you'll just have to watch and see.
Yeah.
Also, we may or may not get to know what number one's real name is.
Yes.
So we'll have to find out on that one. The mission that Pike and the crew of Discovery set out on centers around seven mysterious red bursts spread out over 30,000 light years. And they appear to be possibly signals, but the Discovery has to determine the source and the intent of the signals. The first part of the mission involves the Discovery entering a dangerous area of space in search of the USS Hiawatha. And you see that in I believe it's both trailers, you see some hints of that. When they get down to the surface of an asteroid where they find the Hiawatha, and it's not in very good shape. It's crashed or there's been an explosion or something like that. This is where we meet Chief Engineer Reno, who's played by Tig Notaro. The Hiawatha seems to further deteriorate. Some destruction happens and Burnham is trapped. And that's when she sees the so-called Red Angel and suddenly has the feeling that everything will be all right. So this is all, I think one of the reasons a lot of this stuff out is because it doesn't really tell you anything. It makes you ask questions about, well, what is all this stuff about?
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Later we find out, and I think it's from Amanda, that Spock saw the Red Angel when he was a child. And, of course, we meet Spock, and the first time we see him, he has a beard. Hence the question, well, if Spock has a beard, you know, is he evil Spock or is that okay?
Well, wait a minute. A beard is different from a goatee.
Right. So, don't know what's going on with that. Spock encountered with the signals or the Red Angel have, to put it, I believe the way the actor said, fried his logical brain.
Okay.
So I think what they're trying to do there, I could be wrong, is that we know that in the first pilot, the Spock that we see is not the same Spock that we end up with in TOS. You know, there's more hints of that in the second pilot, but then he seems to really get into Spock the Spock that we know.
Yeah.
So I think that this part of the story is really about that transition or working on that transition of, well, how does that Spock become that Spock?
Yeah, because he was like laughing and stuff.
Exactly. Making fun of people and
just being
really mean.
Captain, there's a, yeah, he puts a kick me sign on the back of the captain. It's good to see you back, Captain.
Right. And we apparently will also learn why Spock never mentioned Burnham. And I was wondering, well, if we find out that answer, will that also answer why Spock never mentioned Cybok?
Maybe it's related. Yeah, maybe. Well, I think he was more ashamed of Cybok, or not ashamed. Well, he doesn't have that emotion, but disowned him, I guess.
Right, but I still feel like, I mean, of course, I don't know if we know if Burnham was in the household at the same time that Cybok was there. I don't. So maybe she doesn't even know about Cybok.
I got news for you. The house of Sarek is really screwed up.
It is. Totally.
That's a dysfunctional family if I ever saw one.
It was an experiment and it failed. Right. So we also have Emperor Giorgio back, and she's now working for Section 31, which we knew from that cutscene or that scene that they leaked but they put out after the series ended, where she's approached by someone from Section 31 and gives her one of the black badges. Mm-hmm. The interesting thing is that the knowledge that she's not Captain Giorgio is on a need to know basis. And apparently Captain Pike is not on that list. So he thinks it is Captain Giorgio.
Yeah. That's what, when you think like, if he goes, hey, look, we need to go get Captain Giorgio. When you think like Burnham or somebody, be like, wait a minute, there's a lot you don't know.
Well, I'm assuming that they were in lockdown that story. I'm trying to figure out, well, what are they going to say about the disappearance of Lorca? Because
how about the truth?
Well, you can't handle the truth.
let's just brush this under the carpet. I don't think that's going to work.
Well, logically, I think you have to do it that way, because if the mirror universe was something widely known, then Kirk and Spock would immediately know Kirk and Spock on either side of the equation would know what was going on when they get the other landing party back again. So I think that that's a tightly guarded secret. Correct me if I'm wrong, if you can, but it's not even clear to me if everyone on the Discovery knows that's not evil.
Well, church. That's a good point, because I don't think they, I know at first they didn't, because that was part of the mission, but afterwards, certainly they did, because some people knew, more people knew, because they had to kind of set up the bomb and they changed. I don't know. Maybe that's a good question.
I think that would be made clear in the season as well, if we find out that it's really, you know, just three or four people that actually know it.
Will it, Clinton?
Well, I think it will. Okay. I think it will. Well, you know, if they don't look at you know, with a like a side eye when they're talking about Captain Giorgio. I think we know right away. Mm-hmm. Laurel and Tyler are on Kronos. And as Chancellor, Laurel is trying to be a good leader and uphold the idea of unification, but there's some opposition among the Klingons.
I bet Spock could help her with that.
I bet. Well, his brain is fried. His logical circuits are...
Well, he had some experience with the unification stuff.
And Tyler is trying to find his place in the universe. The question came up, do Tyler and Laurel interact with the crew of the Discovery? And that's a secret, but I found one interview where Shahzad Latif did say that they were almost acting like ambassadors between the Federation and the Klingons. I can't tell if that was something he wasn't supposed to say, whether you could read too much into that or not. But so I think we're going to get some interaction between I think it would make sense for that to be the case.
I thought I saw a picture from season two, and it had Burnham and Tyler.
Okay.
Maybe. I'm trying to remember if I did or not. I don't remember. But I thought that I did. But they did a dump, and they had a few pictures from season two, and I thought that was one of them, but maybe not.
Oh, okay. Well, could very well. Well, like I said, I've got the feeling that it doesn't make sense for it not to be the case. Mm-hmm. The Klingons will speak a mix of Klingon and English again, but I think this was Mary Chiefa that said, with justification. I'm wondering if one of the justifications could be that the Klingons now feel like they might still consider the Federation to be the enemy, but best to know more about the enemy, so they want to learn English. That's a guess on my part as to why what the justification would be.
With justification, maybe, yeah, maybe. Well, when you're in a situation where you have to, I don't know, maybe to gain a little more acceptance with, English speaking people.
Yeah.
Well. But we've got universal translators, so it doesn't really matter.
Right, but I think really what that means, in my opinion, what that means is that people heard, the production crew heard the feedback that we don't want to read the episode.
Yeah.
And so that they're going to have more English in the episode. I guess that could be the with justification.
Yeah, here's your justification. Well, and I mentioned this before, I thought it was a little distracting because I'm trying to look at all this beautiful makeup and people acting in it, yet I'm having to read, everything they say. And they did sound a little marble mouthed, when trying to just speak Klingon.
Right.
You ever seen a movie where they have subtitles for the first few sentences and they kind of start speaking you're kind of drawn into it. You don't really think about it. That's what I'd be fine with that, but it's like when you're trying to read it and I go, okay, now I got to watch that scene again because I want to see what it looks like, where they're actually talking to each other.
Well, I think I mentioned at the time we were first talking about this that we always have the captioning on because the volumes change on the television set between the commercials and the show, so we'll have it down and what did that person say? And rather than miss it, we just keep the captioning running all the time. So for us, it was like, oh, look. Captions, like always.
Right.
We see at least a glimpse of a classic TOS style D7 Klingon battlecruiser. Mm-hmm. I couldn't tell if that was just a design they were kicking around. I mean, not the production crew, but something new the Klingons were working on. Was it a ship that they had they just hadn't been using? But it's also confusing if they called it a D7 Klingon battlecruiser because they have something that was identified as a D7 in Discovery that doesn't look like the classic TOS. I will have to see how that works out.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing to a lot of people is the Klingons have hair. I know this was like all a buzz on the internets.
You know, I really didn't think much of it. I mean, yeah, I thought, well, Worf had a lot of hair, especially towards the end there.
Yeah.
But I just didn't think about it too much. Did you?
Oh, I wouldn't have, but before season one came out, I heard a lot of this is ridiculous. Where's the hair?
Well, I mean, that's what I'm getting at. I wouldn't have thought much of it unless people were complaining about it.
Right.
That's what I was
saying. Now, the way they're trying to justify this is that they're using a story in one of the episodes. I want to say it was Deep Space Nine, but I could be wrong. The Legend of Kalish, where he cut off some of his hair and it involved the Bat'leth and killing an enemy. And so this concept of cutting off your hair when you're in battle. And of course, then someone says, but they didn't have any hair before they engaged Starfleet in battle. And so they're trying to retcon that by saying, well, the houses were at war with each other, which is why T'Kuvma was trying to unify them. And
that's true.
I mean, you know, I think, again,
they're just
some of this stuff is trying to address some of the issues that people have had.
Yeah, they're just splitting hairs here.
Oh, I see what you did there. And we get to see Tilly angry, apparently quite angry. That would be interesting. We still don't know how Dr. Culber returns. Again, that's no clue how that happens. Someone did ask him about photos of him. They haven't seen any photos of him in any release footage. He's not in the trailers.
Yeah.
And I think he said something along the lines of, well, if you saw that, it might give you some clue about what's happening. So that's interesting. Again, is he just in the mycelial network? Is he actually back? What is going on with him? But he definitely is a returning character.
Mm-hmm.
We also are going to Talos, which really was a shock to me. If Pike and Spock go to Talos, are they doing actually parts of that episode? The mind boggles as to what is happening that they're going there.
I don't know, but they did. Well, you know, they had the cage and they kind of repurposed it later on.
Right.
You know, so maybe it's further repurposing that episode. I don't know.
We'll have to see. And Alex Kurtzman says, we're going to bring everything into alignment and by the end of the season. Now, we've heard this before. We didn't hear it really when we heard it talked about in season one, but I think at that point they were talking about by the end of the series. Now Kurtzman is saying by the end of the season.
Hmm.
And I don't know if that's, you know, if it's these glimmers of a classic Klingon battle cruiser, Klingons have hair. The Enterprise is showing up. We got Kirk, and we have Spock and Pike. What does that have to do with the signals? Is that somehow going to?
I say don't go changing just to please me, because I think that if they do too much, hey, we're doing everything to make it right all at once. I think that's crazy. But if they do it over a few seasons and end up dovetailing it into the rest of Star Trek, that'd be awesome. I don't need to see it tomorrow.
Right. I think even if it was just the things we've talked about here, you know, if you're addressing some of the big issues people have now, one of my friends, their biggest problem with the entire season one was not the ships, was not the story, it was the uniforms. She couldn't get past the uniforms.
Hmm.
Now she's a costumer, so maybe that had something to do with it. But I don't know how, if all those things are really going to be addressed in 13 episodes,
yeah,
or whether we're just moving a little more forward and you get a sense by the end of season two, I see where they're going with this type of thing.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's everything that I could pull together. There are other bits of casting news and little pieces of information here or there, but I found it fascinating that there's so much information out there about season two. And yet really, when you go through it all, you know, next to nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's like three things we learned out of all of these 30 bullet points you got here.
Yep. I mean, we know some things, you know, we know places they're going, interactions they'll have, but it's interesting that there's really no guts of the story other than it revolves around these seven signals and the Red Angel.
Right.
But no clue as to what that stuff is. So I think it's teasing it just enough to get you interested.
Oh yeah. I've been paying for CBS All Access all year.
That's right.
So yeah, I'm interested.
Yeah, but I don't know what next. I think Twilight Zone will be starting up, but I think that that starts up to next year though.
You know, so. I will say that I am interested in seeing that coming back. I'm curious to see how their take on it.
Right. But this show's about the topic of Trek, it's about CBS All Access.
You're right. Excuse me. Pardon me.
No, I brought it up. My bad. All right, that was our main mission. And now it's time to come back from our main mission so we can all sit down at the Warp Speed Roundtable. Is that the bad warp engine? Is that what that was?
Yeah, it's bad, okay. All right.
It was seamless. Couldn't even tell. Now, before we go into this week's Warp Speed Roundtable, we have some additional answers to last episode's question, where we asked, which of these would you rather do and why? And the choices were, have a job ending the Borg threat, attempting to survive in the Mirror Universe, or have Cyrano Jones' task of cleaning up all the Tribbles on the K-7 space station without the help of the Glommer.
Right.
Michael P. said, probably three, which is Cyrano Jones, because the other two have a high risk of danger, i.e. the Alpha Quadrant being assimilated because of a miscalculation or being stuck in a pain booth for years, or worse, in the Mirror Universe. At least Tribbles are harmless. Hey, Sandy.
Hey, by the way.
Yes?
Google thinks that that's a misspelling, the pain booth, and I right-clicked on it, says paint booth.
Oh, Google, you have much to learn about Star Trek.
Sorry.
Sandy M. Wrote that with a high risk of danger, I'd say one, which is the Borg. Technology, as integrated as it is, should not ever take the place of humans entirely. To be a part of one mind only is not the best for humanity as we know. To interfere with free will goes against the very nature of the universe's intentions. So... her path is clear. ProWes W. chimed in saying, I'd pick the Tribbles. They're soft and furry and purr so soothingly. Might get tedious, but sure beats being assimilated or being assassinated by your subordinates.
Well, don't the Tribbles kind of assimilate everything?
well, they infiltrate. Can if there's enough of them, I suppose. If they ran out of everything else and you're there on the station, well, let's not think about that.
Maybe infest. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah.
And finally, Howard C. writes, Tribbles are far less likely to murder or assimilate you than Borg or Terrans. So clearly the Tribbles, Cyrano Jones' task is the winner. And thanks to everyone who responded before we record every episode, I post the previous episode's question, so feel free to chime in on there. Or if you want to chime in ahead of time, just leave a note over at our Facebook page for The Topic is Trek. And now, quickly, to this week's game. Star Trek comics have done a lot of crossovers with other franchises over the years. They've included Transformers, Aliens, Planet of the Apes, Zombies versus Robots, Doctor Who, and both the DC and Marvel comic universes. But what crossover would you like to see happen in the Star Trek comics?
The Hair Bear Bunch.
Is that your final answer?
Well, it was either that or the Flintstones. Sure.
Okay.
The Hair Bear Bunch.
Any reason in particular for that?
No, it just seems ridiculous. I want to see that. Wait a minute. And we're talking about, I want to see the animated TOS crossover with the Hair Bear Bunch.
Well, this is for comics. So,
okay.
And that's like, because I found a page that listed all the crossovers with other things, and almost all of them were comic books, plus a crossover on Webster with TNG. And Webster. I remember this when, do you remember when Esurance had Aaron Esurance? There was, I think it was a tie-in promotion with Star Trek 09. Uh-huh. It was an animated episode, an animated commercial with Star Trek characters in that as well. So, but pretty much everything else has been as a comic. So I was trying to limit it. Now, I was limiting it to comics for what the Star Trek portion, but although Planet of the Apes and Aliens, I believe, have also been adapted for comics, mm-hmm. So you don't have to have what they're interacting with be from the comics if you don't want to.
That's true. Doctor Who wasn't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And my choice would be Josie and the Pussycats.
Another Hanna-Barbera staple.
Yes, because I want a musical episode. And I figure that's the way you get it. If you have a band in there and you just have to have a
musical. That's what the Hair Bear Bunch did.
Right. I think you'd have to do it like Mad Magazine, though, because being a comic, you don't get to hear the songs. But if it's Weird Al-ish in the way that it just, and again, like Mad Magazine would do, to use a song, but with alternate lyrics to it.
Mm-hmm.
So you could hear the song in your head as you're reading the lyrics to it. So our answers were very silly, but you might have something that actually makes some sense.
Good luck.
Yeah. If you do, then please leave us a note on our Facebook page at The Topic is Trek. And we will include those answers in our next episode when we recap all the answers that we go, oh, that was so much better than ours.
Yeah.
But for now, it's time to refill the dilithium chamber and get on out of here.
Sorry, I was trying to start it up again.
I was going to say that engine needs work, which is why we run on impulse power here. You can find me, Clinton, at comedyforecast.com, also on Twitter, Comedy Forecast, on Facebook, Comedy Forecast. You can find Craig and that guy that didn't bother to show up this time because he's off traveling the world.
Yep.
Craig at the Technorama Podcast.
Yes. And that is at chuckchat.com.
Okay. Hit the theme, boys. If you like the show, please be sure to tell a friend about it and subscribe so you never miss an episode. We'd love to hear from you. Follow us on Twitter at The Topic is Trek, visit our Facebook page, or visit thetopicistrek.com. Until next time, on behalf of Craig, myself, and Chuck, wherever he may be, I'm Clinton, thanking you for listening. And as we always see here on The Topic is Trek,
don't put on the red shirt. You got some red on you.
I do? Oh, that's just blood. Don't worry about it.